to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events throughout our 7-county listening area in central Iowa. Thanks for listening in for our special Earth Day program during our fun drive, Radio for Everyone. Earth Day is truly a day for everyone throughout the world. But here in central Iowa, we bring you important local insights that you will find only from your friends on KHOI. Today, I'm pleased to have as co-host KHOI's nature reporter, Pat Schlarbaum, for whom every day is Earth Day. Hi, Pat.
Hello, Susan, and good morning. And to everyone listening as we celebrate Earth Day from its beginnings to its prospects for the future.
But before we begin, let's catch up on the news from the pages of the Ames Tribune, brought to us by Dennis Hart.
Hello again, and thanks for inviting me back here on this Monday. Health made big news around Iowa last week when the State Department of Public Health announced that 2 people living in the northeast part of Iowa had contracted measles. They were the first confirmed cases of measles in the state in 8 years. The department said the first Iowan had not been vaccinated and caught the illness on a trip to Israel, where recent outbreaks had been reported. The second case involved an unvaccinated household contact of the first victim. Iowa health officials said there was no indication there was any threat to the public and that it's a reminder for residents to keep their vaccines up to date. In presidential politics, Democratic hopeful Pete Buttigieg showed up for a rally in Des Moines last week. His rally was interrupted by protesters shouting about Sodom and Gomorrah. One of those protesters, Randall Terry, a Christian activist who founded the anti-abortion rights group known as Operation Rescue. The crowd at the rally drowned out Terry's shouts. Buttigieg told the crowd, in his words, "The good news is, the condition of my soul is in the hands of God, but the Iowa caucuses are up to you." The South Bend mayor hopes to become the first openly gay president in American history. Also last week, another Democratic presidential hopeful, Cory Booker, went to a house party in Nevada. He told those in attendance that the United States has, in his words, the worst health care system on planet Earth in regards to medical costs, and said the pathway to Medicare for All begins with Medicare for all who want it, starting with lowering the eligibility age. He also called climate change an existential crisis. And yet another Democratic hopeful, New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, showed up in Ames and said the United States is in a place where President Trump has spread a darkness and an anxiety that's real. As part of her visit, Gillibrand took part in an arm wrestling contest with a Des Moines area community college student. In Iowa's 4th congressional district, the most prominent Republican challenger to Republican incumbent Steve King in next year's election reported raising 4 times as much campaign money in filings with the Federal Election Commission. State Senator Randy Feenstra reported raising $260,000 since his campaign launched in January. King raised $61,000. 2 other Republicans who have also announced they're running against King reported their campaign contributions. Woodbury County Supervisor Jeremy Taylor raised $58,000, and Brett Richards of Irwin had raised $17,000 and took out $48,000 in loans. In other news last week, a report concluded that a series of infrastructure failures in a crumbling state dormitory caused that toxic gas leak that sickened dozens of recruits at an Iowa police academy last November. The report said at least 3 recruits were poisoned by potentially lethal levels of carbon monoxide after an air handling unit and a heating boiler simultaneously malfunctioned at the Iowa Law Enforcement Academy in Johnston. Also last week, 2 Des Moines schools were evacuated because of an odor. Students at Hoyt Middle School and at Brubaker Elementary School were told to leave the building so whatever was causing the smell could be investigated. The elementary school is attached to the middle school. Eventually, no source for the unpleasant odor was found. Meanwhile, prosecutors said last week that the man accused of killing Iowa State student Celia Barkane Arosemena would get a fair and impartial trial in Story County. This after defendant Colin Richards asked that his trial be moved out of the county, arguing that numerous media outlets continue to report on the case. Richards was arrested after police found Barkane Arosemena dead with multiple stab wounds at the Coldwater Golf Links in Ames last September. Meanwhile, a Polk City man was arrested last week after authorities said he drunkenly drove into a Drake University fraternity house. No one was injured. Around the state, 5 people died in Iowa after their vehicles were struck by trains. 3 women were killed when their SUV was hit by a train crossing Old Highway 34 in Burlington. There were no gate arms or flashing lights at the crossing, but there was a stop sign. In another crash, 2 men died when their SUV was hit by a train in Cedar Rapids. there were 9 fatal train incidents in Iowa last year. Meanwhile, in Ames, a motorcyclist died in a crash on South Duff Avenue. In Marshalltown last week, the body of a woman who went missing about a month ago was found. 32-year-old Michelle Marie Grommet of Mason City was reported missing on March 22nd. Her body was discovered by a man working in a field just east of the Marshalltown Walmart. Authorities said there was no evidence of foul play. Also in Marshalltown, police arrested a man in connection with a shooting that left 3 injured. 22-year-old Trevion Devante Harden was charged with attempted murder and other charges. Authorities said the shootings were not a random act, that everyone involved was at a party and was acquainted with each other. In Des Moines, a 17-year-old was identified as the city's 4th homicide victim of the year. Donzel Martin of Des Moines died of a gunshot wound a week ago. Police said he had been targeted. Authorities arrested 28-year-old Jabel Williams of Des Moines in connection with the killing. Then, later last week, a man who had been stabbed became Des Moines' 5th homicide victim of the year. 31-year-old Thien Ong was found in the 1000 block of 9th Street. Still in Des Moines, police arrested a man who threatened to kill numerous people inside a gas station. 43-year-old Gerald Michael Evans was booked Saturday on 4 charges. Meanwhile, an Iowa jury found a 24-year-old man guilty of killing a college basketball player. Luke Van Hemmert of Oskaloosa faces up to 50 years in prison in connection with the fatal stabbing of 22-year-old Marquis Todd. Todd played for William Penn University's basketball team. Van Hemmert tried to use Iowa's Stand Your Ground law as a defense in the incident that took place in Oskaloosa. Still on the court beat, a Story County judge threw out a former Iowa State University basketball player's breach of contract lawsuit that claimed the school mishandled a sexual abuse case against him and hindered his chance to play professionally. Boo Boo Paulo had accused the university of using the student disciplinary process to wrongly punish him after his criminal case was dropped. The judge's order ends, at least for now, Paulo's years-long legal battle with Iowa State University. In Cedar Rapids, a judge sentenced a former DuPont manager to 3.5 years in federal prison for stealing trade secrets about the company's ethanol fuel business and giving them to a competitor who hired him. 55-year-old Josh Isler had pleaded guilty to stealing trade secrets and making false statements to the FBI. Also last week, 2 fugitives were arrested after they allegedly led Iowa State troopers on a high-speed chase that lasted 54 miles and spread across 3 counties. At times, the vehicle reached speeds of 130 miles an hour. Eventually, Frederick Gordon II of Kentucky and Anthony Jerome Jones of Georgia were stopped. Gordon was wanted on a nationwide warrant for credit card fraud. Jones is wanted on a Georgia warrant for charges including auto theft. In Davenport last week, 6 massage businesses were shut down because they did not comply with the city's new ordinance on licensing. Police said no arrests were made when a city enforcement team visited the establishments. Also last week, a Des Moines man admitted stealing thousands of dollars from his union and from the United Way of Central Iowa. 54-year-old Theodore Watson now faces up to 25 years in prison. In Ames, a story made statewide news when police arrested a man after they said he stabbed his puppy and left him inside a dumpster. 20-year-old Rashidi Dipli Simba was jailed on a charge of animal torture. Authorities said he admitted stabbing his 5-month-old German Shepherd named Moose because he was upset with his puppy. Moose was said to be recovering at the Ames Animal Shelter. There was plenty of other news last week, including word that Dallas County in Iowa continued to be the fastest-growing county in the state, and one of the fastest-growing counties in the entire nation. The population in Dallas County has increased by more than 36% since 2010. Strong population growth was also reported in the Des Moines metro area, as well as in the Cedar Rapids and Iowa City areas. The report also shows that among Iowa's 99 counties, 69 lost population. There was also news about money, Iowa lottery money to be exact. Last week, the lottery said a $1 million Mega Millions ticket had been sold in Sioux City. That ticket came within one number of winning Friday's $175 million jackpot. Speaking of money, Google plans to give away $1 million to nonprofits through a competitive grant process. The program is called Impact Challenge Iowa. Nonprofits can submit proposals for ideas to grow economic opportunity in their local communities. A panel of local judges will review the applications and award 5 winners $175,000 each in grant funding. And one more note before I go. 30 years ago yesterday, the iconic baseball movie Field of Dreams premiered. As just about every Iowan knows, it was filmed northeast of Dyersville in Dubuque County. Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones starred in it, as did that baseball field. And there were all those memorable lines, the most memorable being, "Is this heaven?" "No, it's Iowa." That movie, about a son's yearning to reunite with his late father, made lots of grown men cry when they saw it, including this grown man when I saw it. And yes, I have been on that field of dreams near Dyersville. I have run the bases, taken the pitcher's mound, walked into those cornfields beyond the outfield. And the funny thing is, when I did all that, it sure felt like heaven to me. And that's your summary of the week's news from around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, taking the next few days off, but promising to return right here on Friday with a look at what made news around Ames. In the meantime, have a safe, healthy, happy week.
Thank you, Dennis. In keeping with that question, is this heaven? No, this is Iowa. I'll turn the program over to my co-host and nature reporter, Pat Schlarbaum.
Thank you, Susan. Yeah. And coming up, we're going to have an interview from Larry Stone, who's an outdoor writer, retired now, from the Des Moines Register. Many years he penned and kept us informed of outdoor activities going on around the state. And I first learned of this man's quest to link Iowans to the outdoors. In 1993, Larry had planned to canoe the whole length of the Des Moines River and had different segments, and I was asked to come along and help interpret the river otter inclusion that had occurred right at the confluence of the Boone Forks on the Boone River, upstream from Lehigh, Iowa. So I met Larry there at Lehigh, and we started paddling south. And it was a delightful opportunity, but it wasn't in 1993 because of the floods. He had postponed it until 1994. So we learned the length of the Des Moines River together, and that was quite an opportunity to learn a lot more about Larry Stone, and our friendship has only grown in the last 30 years. So let's hear from Larry Stone. So this morning on Local Talk, Larry Stone from Elkhader, Iowa. And some of our listeners may recall seeing Larry Stone's name in the Des Moines Register on the Outdoor Life page. Hello, Larry Stone.
I'm here, Pat. Yeah, I really appreciate the chance to visit this morning.
Well, this is Earth Day, and I know you have a long-standing tradition with environmental writing. How would you describe to our listener Larry Stone's life up to this moment?
Oh, my. Since I'm 70-plus years old, there's a lot to say there. But I grew up on a farm in down around Indianola, southern Iowa, and had my fingers in the dirt and the mud, as with my earliest memories, and loved the land and the farm. But I wanted to share that somehow with others, and the short version is I eventually got into a biology degree at Coe College and then a conservation journalism master's degree at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Was that in the late 60s?
Graduated from Coe in 68, then I was at Michigan then in 1969 and 70. So, yeah. And some of your listeners may recall that that was kind of a active time with protests and activism of several sorts around the country, Vietnam War protests, civil rights protests, and that sort of social movement. And a young man named Dennis Hayes decided that with the Vietnam War actions that were taking place, that there needed to be a similar teach-in, he called it, about the environment. And so the idea for Earth Day was spawned, and the first one was going to be in 1970.
Oh, as I recall, in that era, there was a lot happening. There was a TV commercial with a Native American with a tear in his eye as someone threw a bag of trash at his feet, kind of iconic memory of that era. And also the Cuyahoga River caught on fire. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah, I do. So,
is there other action or other occurrences that precipitated your need to get activated and speak out for the environment?
Well, as I said, it was I'd had my biology degree at Coe in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and I had thought about getting into the field of wildlife management, and then somehow, you know, I'd seen some TV programs and done some reading of people talking about and explaining some of these, wildlife issues. You know, some of the National Geographic TV specials probably had to do with it. But I thought, maybe I could have a bigger impact if I were trying to communicate issues to people as opposed to just strictly doing research or management, so that I drifted over into the communications field and ended up at the University of Michigan because they had a program there where you could combine your master's degree with journalism for half of it, and then the other half was a field of your choice, and in my case it was natural resources and conservation.
Do you recall your first articles that you wrote?
I did a number of papers for journalism classes at the University of Michigan about the effort at that time to ban DDT because of its problems, environmental problems, specifically damage to raptors and bird life from thinning of eggshells caused by DDT. The Alaska pipeline was being heavily debated at that time, whether or how to build the Alaska pipeline. I wrote about that. There were several dramatic oil spills from offshore oil drilling.
Oh, yeah, off the California coast.
Yeah. So there was a huge jet airport being planned near the Everglades in Florida. I wrote about that. And those are sort of the research papers I did for journalism at the University of Michigan.
At the first Earth Day, that you were you assisting coordinating with that, or did you invite speakers? And who presented at that first Earth Day in Michigan?
Well, there were several, and you say the first, and we brag a little bit. Ours was the first, because Earth Day supposedly was going to be on April 22nd. As it turned out, that was during our spring break, so we had to move our Earth Day activities to the week prior to that. So we were the first one, even though there were hundreds or thousands of them around the country, we thought we were the first. And it was kind of a who's who of speakers at that time. We had David Brower, who was with the Sierra Club and then eventually formed another organization that still goes on today.
Oh, sure.
Friends of the Earth. We had Ralph Nader. Oh, he had gotten some notoriety in the 60s writing about the Corvair car that was unsafe at any speed.
Yes.
He pointed out some problems with that, but then he was also involved in other environmental issues. Gaylord Nelson, who was the senator from Wisconsin, who was quite active on in environmental issues. Barry Commoner, who was a writer about environmental issues and had been for, oh, probably a decade before Earth Day.
Yeah, I wrote the book Common Cause.
That might be it. There were a couple others, the Science and Survival. I'm trying to remember the name. I've got all these books.
But Barry Commoner was a very influential voice, and the other, especially Gaylord Nelson, and it sounded like you really put together an incredible panel. Please go ahead.
Do you remember the name Paul Ehrlich?
Oh, sure.
The population bomb was his topic of, about what we need to do to reduce the number of the increase in the population, because people are kind of the causes of environmental problems that may come along.
Boy, I can only imagine that group of presenters a week before Earth Day, and then they probably all returned to their home bases and contributed to other April 22nd Earth Day activities around the world.
Well, and it was primary emphasis on the environment, but also it was pointed out the social problems caused by environmental problems. And the prime example of that was Walter Reuther, who was, I think, at that time chair of the United Auto Workers, and saying that, the auto workers sometimes had severe environmental problems because they lived near factories with pollution, and they had to work in factories with pollution, and so the people suffered because of some of the environmental problems. So that was another thing that important to continue to be.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And these things were kind of pointed out to me quite recently. I heard a writer named Terry Tempest Williams speak at the University of Northern Iowa. Do you recognize that name by chance?
Yes, she was just there Friday evening.
But she was pointing out problems that she has encountered. She's a native of Utah, and she made some strong comparisons of Utah and Iowa. She said, we're both conservative people, but we're tied to our land. And in Utah, there have been quite a number of issues, environmental issues. Some uranium mining has caused problems and sickness and some deaths in the Native American people there who have worked in the mines. A recent move by the president to remove the Bear's Ears National Monument greatly reduced the size of that, and also of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument, which are sacred lands to the Native Americans, to open up those for oil drilling and mineral exploration. So Terry Tempest Williams was pointing out how closely tied the social and the environmental issues are. So, and she pointed out in Iowa, we are heavily dependent on our use of our land, sometimes abuse of our land, for agriculture. She said that, Iowans can feel that pain too over the disappearance of our tall grass prairie over the past 150 years, and it's now productive agricultural land, but we need to do more regenerative agriculture as opposed to extractive agriculture, and that is one of the movements that we hope is growing in force in Iowa.
Boy, that's a very powerful message at this each spring in our agricultural state. And as a member of the Clayton County Conservation Board, Larry Stone, and a citizen of the natural world, what do you have planned for Earth Day 2019?
Well, one thing, I'm helping our Conservation Board naturalist with the school groups that are coming to our Osborne Nature Center for the field trips. We're going to be touring our nature center and the grounds there. So,
and what a beautiful destination that can be. Anyone traveling in the driftless of northeast Iowa just outside El Cader.
And we're hoping to, well, the grandkids may be here the day before Earth Day, and we're going to be out looking at wildflowers or listening to wild turkeys. We might even get down to the Turkey River and pick up a few rocks.
Oh, I hope you can.
Being outdoors and appreciating this, you know, what we have around us is kind of the most important thing.
And we are, I would extend my appreciation to you for this interview. We are involved with our community radio fundraising, Spring Drive. So I'm curious, how does community radio fit into what's important in Larry and Margaret Stone's life up in the Turkey River area of Northeast Iowa?
Well, it's important for people to be informed, and I like that word, community. Of course, our friend and mentor, Sylvan Runkel, you know, we're talking about citizens of the natural community, you know, everything from people to frogs to birds to whatever. So that community is pretty important. So, and one thing that Terry Tempest Williams mentioned was how important community is, because getting people informed and getting them to collaborate and then have a sense of community is really the way that we can make some action. And that, to her, was important. You know, we need to unite as people in a community, and then she said, question things, stand up for things, speak out for things, and act. And that is all part of the community.
Oh, I hear that.
It helps us stay informed to do those things.
Yeah, that's a great message, and I sure want to convey my appreciation, Larry Stone. I hope you get out with your grandchildren this weekend and see some wildflowers and enjoy this beautiful land, what we have here in Iowa, and keep up the good work.
Not only enjoy it, but help protect and restore it is the important thing, too.
Thank you, Larry Stone.
Thank you, Pat.
This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
You're listening to KHOI's special Earth Day program with co-hosts Pat Schlarbaum and Susan Friends, and reminding you of the unique relationship to the natural world our programs bring you. Pat's knowledge and experience from his years of working with those reintroducing species as ospreys and peregrine falcons, to say nothing of the iconic Decora eagles, has enriched our understanding. We hope it has enriched yours as well, and that you'll consider supporting this kind of reporting by becoming a member. Pat, can you tell our listeners how they can do this?
Please stop in at 410 Douglas, here right across from the Octagon in downtown Ames. View our studios. We welcome all our listeners to come by and see how these programs get put together. But in lieu of that, you can always give us a call at 515-292-2878, or go to the website, khoifm.org, and locate that donate button. We're currently trying to grow our membership field from 400 individuals, and we're deeply involved with our spring fund drive at this time. And as we get these spring showers and the gardens and everything greening up, help green up our positions here at the station. And please remember that your membership is what makes KHOI possible.
One of the results of Pat's outstanding nature reporting has been an ongoing relationship with Outdoor Alliance of Story County, which underwrites his reports, as you heard. Here's an example of his well-known phonologies.
In this segment, our KHOI community includes our resident house finches nestling above the front door. Our house finch songbird population is growing and singing well, with an interesting migration to Iowa from the East Coast.
Thank you.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The last frost of spring or the last osprey of autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's phenology are the house finches. So did you know that a songbird with a beautiful voice has come to Iowa from New York City? House finches are small-bodied finches the size of our state bird, the American goldfinch. Their story of coming to Iowa is unique to only a very few species. In the first part of the 20th century, house finches were trapped in California and transported to the East Coast pet stores. People loved their singing. However, trapping and selling songbirds is a violation of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act of 1918. New York pet shop owners, who had been selling the finches illegally, released their birds in 1940 to escape prosecution. The finches survived and began to colonize the New York suburbs. So by 50 years later, in the 1990s, they had advanced halfway across the continent and meeting their western kin on the Great Plains. The house finches are very accepting, and partly due to the cheerful red head and the breast of the males and to the bird's long twittering song, which can now be heard in most neighborhoods of the continent. If you haven't seen one recently, chances are you can find one at the next bird feeder you come across or right here at the Pantorium, 410 Douglas, downtown Ames. House finches have been nesting. The nest is built mostly by the female, is an open cup of grass, weeds, some twigs, and rootlets, sometimes with feathers, string, or other nest material is added. They have laid 4 or 5 pale blue with black and lavender dots eggs, and that's what we're striving for here at the Ames Pantorium. They are nesting at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames, and this is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio 89.1, and this is our phenology for today, the house finches of the Ames Pantorium.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and for this Earth Day, we are bringing you a sound collage from past shows relating to the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture. The collage starts with Ralph Rosenberg, who was in the Iowa legislature when the Leopold Center was founded. Second is Angie Carter, who had benefited as a graduate student in sustainable agriculture and fought the decision to end the funding for the Leopold Center in 2017. Then we had Fred Kirschenmann, director of the Leopold Center from 2000 to 2005, giving his perspective on the reason the Leopold Center had powerful enemies in the legislature. And when you hear that, think back to Larry Stone talking about regenerative agriculture. And finally, Aaron Lehman, president of the Iowa Farmers Union, spells out some of the details of the closing of the Leopold Center. In future programs, KHOI will have more stories by other individuals and organizations that carry on its legacy in whatever way they can. These are the kinds of stories that are featured on KHOI. We hope, as you listen to this Earth Day program, you will consider why it is important to keep us broadcasting into the future as a result of our fund drive. As of today, $25,690. That's half of where we want to go, so we still need you. But we are asking you to consider joining at $55 a year, or if you can afford it, becoming a sustaining member at $250 a year, or $21 a month. Just call us after 9 a.m. at 515-292-2878 or text us at 515-200-7758. Or come into the Pantorium at 410 Douglas Avenue in downtown Ames and see if you can listen to the house finches. This week would be a great time to do it. Tonight through Thursday, we'll have concerts from 7 to 8 p.m. These are free, and you don't have to be a member to attend. Or you can listen to these Pentorium sessions live on the radio at the same hour. At 7 p.m., there will be a live broadcast from a group of young poets called Spoken Word for our first Pentorium session.
And another activity I might point out later on this afternoon at 2 p.m., there'll be a dedication of a Carroll Prairie area just northeast of Ames, and the address is 200th Street and 610 Avenue, which is about 1 mile south of E-29. But go out there. The Outdoor Alliance of Story County will be having a prairie walk and a great Earth Day activity.
So let's get going with the Leopold Center story.
The Leopold Center is part of the 1987 Groundwater Protection Act. So to understand the history of the Leopold Center, I think people need to understand the history of the Groundwater Protection Act. And while it passed in 1987, it was really the product of several years of effort. And it was a product of many legislators, Democrats and Republicans. It really was bipartisan, and its passage was due to it being bipartisan. In the early 80s, there was growing concerns over the threats to groundwater. There was studies being done. There was a Department of Natural Resources was doing some statewide water plan. The karst region in northeast Iowa was showing some of the migration of contaminants, and there was a growing concern about the threat to water. And so over a two-year period, we had multiple legislative committees meeting to figure out what's the best way to attack the threats to groundwater and to create a sustainable, financially sustainable, and politically sustainable proposal. And in addition to efforts to deal with landfills, underground storage tanks, household hazardous waste, there were the efforts to deal with the agriculture component. And part of the agriculture component was a realization that we needed a home for the research, demonstration, and education projects. And the Leopold Center is that home.
I would like to read from a letter my ISU alumni cohort and I wrote that was in the Des Moines Register yesterday online. Let us all remember Aldo Leopold, the center's namesake and Iowa's native son. He described Iowa not as a food factory, but as a living, working landscape in which farmers and citizens share in the abundance of its natural richness. The gift of fertile soils and fresh water can continue to shape the prosperity of the state. Yet seemingly overnight, a small group of politicians decided on the fate of a state-cherished, nationally recognized research center without consulting the farmers, without consulting the students, and without consulting the researchers who rely upon the center as a key partner. This partisan politicking denigrates the spirit of Leopold himself and makes the shared goal of safeguarding our landscape for this generation and future generations less possible by the day. This morning, I spoke with Paul Johnson as I came to the Capitol for this hearing. He spoke with several of us who are current students and alumni from Iowa State. He was on his way to meet with the governor to talk about these cuts. And he reminded us that the Iowa Farm Bureau originally supported the Groundwater Protection Act that funds this center. This is a nonpartisan center that is being put on the chopping block through partisan politicking. This makes our state look really awful, not just to our legislators and the constituents here in the state, but nationally as well, because the center is a nationally recognized research center for what it does. It is not replicated elsewhere on the Iowa State University campus. It is not replicated elsewhere in our state. It is not replicated elsewhere in our country. It doesn't cost our state anything because its funding is from the fertilizer tax, and so we're really confused how you came up so fast with these cuts. I would urge you today to fund the Leopold Center and to introduce an amendment to the budget bill.
You know, the Leopold Center has always been a little bit controversial because, as you probably know, there are essentially two cultures in agriculture, not just in Iowa, but throughout the world. And one of those cultures is still more rooted in the Industrial Revolution where the notion is that we have to dominate nature and control nature and force nature to do what we want to do, and we have to use lots of inputs to make that happen. The other culture, which is the culture that the Leopold Center has been sponsoring more, is one in which we see nature as a partner that we need to cooperate with and learn from. And the thing, from my point of view at least, that I think is so important about that is that the cheap inputs that we've had to support the agriculture of the Industrial Revolution are not going to be there much longer in the future. So we're going to have to learn how to, and terms which are used more now is a more regenerative agriculture, so that everything that we use in agriculture gets renewed in the process of using them. And they're more self-regulating and more resilient. And so I think that's the kind of agriculture that we need to be developing now, especially with the generation of young farmers. And what excites me is that there are an increasing number of especially young farmers who understand this and are already starting to make that kind of transition. And so that's what we've been up to.
The Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. You understand, of course, that the Leopold Center has been the subject of a mighty debate at the end of the legislative session that left its name intact but took away all state funding. And it was only left with the gifts that have been given to the Leopold Center over the years, those that will continue to fund the Leopold Center in a very, very scaled-down manner at this point. So as a result, we wanted to take some action and show our support for the Leopold Center, and we were able to get some generous help to do this matching program. So for every new member who joins with the Iowa Farmers Union, we'll be able to match under this program $20 to go to the Leopold Center and their great work supporting the Graduate Program for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State.
And you've been listening to a collage of speakers that have presented at KHOY Community Radio this morning. This is Pat Schlarbaum with co-host Susan Franson. And these are the kinds of stories that are featured on KHOY. So we hope you listen on this Earth Day and you will consider why it is important to keep us broadcasting into the future. And KHOY is happy to say that we will turn 7 years old in August.
It was on August 15th, 2012, that your community radio station went on the air for the first time, and so much has happened since we first turned on that transmitter.
We've featured many wonderful stories, talented programmers, and exciting events from our historic Pantorium sessions in downtown Ames.
We've had fun helping to build our community through radio, and we've come this far because of our hardworking volunteers and our loyal listeners.
It's radio for everyone and everyone for radio. We especially want to thank our members and supporters who provide the financial funding needed to keep the station on the air. So if you're already a member of KHOY, thank you so much for your support.
If you're not yet a member, now is the time to sign up. Basic memberships are just $55 a year, about 15 cents a day. Or maybe you'll want to become a friend of KHOY at $250 a year or $20 a month on the economy plan. Earlier I said 21, which, you know, adds up a little better to 250.
But it also addresses becoming a sustaining member. Anything worthwhile requires maintenance and sustenance. There's a special incentive to give to KHOY right now. Several of our loyal listeners have created a challenge grants for this fund drive. That means that every dollar you pledge earns a second dollar from the challenge grants, and that means that your money is going twice as far to support KHOY.
Join right now by calling the station at 515-292-2878 or go online at khoi.org and touch the donate button, or text us at 515-200-7758. And thank you. This is KHOI Community Radio, and I am Susan Franzen, one of your hosts for this Earth Day program. And to wrap that up, we have an interview with a distinguished guest who will tell us about an international conference that is taking place right now.
My name is John Davis. I'm a climate analyst, and I'm talking to you today because the WeDon'tHaveTime.org, which is an international organization headquartered in Sweden, and on the 22nd, they're putting together a round-the-world climate conference online using Zoom interviews with different people in the climate community and have them speak about what they're doing. And I'm going to be on at 8 o'clock that morning, our time. It'd be 1500 Central Eastern Time.
You said people from all over the world. Are there people from Asian countries also?
Yes, there are. The people that can't get to the actual site in Sweden will be able to get onto this website and participate, listen, and be part of the program. And Greta is going to be there. She's going to be speaking.
I presume, because they've heard her, most of our listeners know who Greta Thunberg is, but maybe you could fill in just a little about who she is and probably why this conference is in Sweden.
Well, she is a young, forceful, vibrant young lady who finally has said, look at adults, you are destroying our world, and we're going to do something about it. And she is an icon for many groups around the world that are fighting to get governments to understand that climate has got to be a number one issue, or else we're going to be a very dead society in 50 years.
Well, of course, we did have a strike here in Ames also, so a lot of us do know about it, but I just needed a reintroduction for anyone who didn't. But what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to be talking about the need for massive political action by every country, and particularly here in the United States, to bring climate change to the forefront of this presidential campaign. Because if we don't have a change in government, we're not going to get anything done under the Republican administration.
Well, of course, here in Iowa, the caucus season has already begun. Have you talked to any of the candidates?
Yes, I've talked with Jay Inslee. The fact is, I gave him a tour here in Hamburg, Iowa, on the 12th. And Wednesday evening, I met with Kirsten Gillibrand, and we talked climate, and met her again yesterday in Clarinda and continued our discussion on climate change. I hope to meet every candidate before this is all over.
Well, you have a lot of time. And presumably they're all going to be coming to Iowa several times before the actual caucus date in January.
Right. I have a interview page that I'll be asking them all the exact same questions. And then I'm going to review those and then determine who's one, two, three, four, all the way down, and the rationales why. And these will be based on their answers to ongoing issues and scientific fact.
Well, do you have those questions and any other information on your website?
No, I'm going to be putting information out this Sunday, because Saturday, a international filming company that is called Inside Climate News, they just received a huge award at the National Press Club, are flying out here to meet me tomorrow and are going to do a story on me about climate.
So by Monday, when this show airs, your website will be up, is that right?
I will have the information out. I'll be sending out through my Facebook account, yes.
Okay. Well, I'll watch your Facebook account.
And I'll be sending out by email to every single candidate's office, all of the state Democratic chairs, and to you, of course, and most of the newspapers.
Do you have an Earth Day message besides what you'll be talking to the International Conference about? Do you have an Earth Day message for our listeners?
Yes. We have to understand adverse climate change is here, and we have until 2030 to start fixing it. It has to be fixed by 2030, or else society as we know it is going to start going down. If we get it 1.5% above industrial, we're going to have some tragic problems with agriculture here in Iowa. If it gets to 2%, crop yield will go down 50%.
You used a word, though, that always bothers me. We need to start. We needed to have started 25 years ago at least.
We need to have started in 1970.
So how do we move fast enough to make the changes we have to make?
The only way to move fast enough is to have a complete change in government and a complete change in our economic outlook. All we've been doing so far is continuing on a fossil fuel-based economic base of mass consumerism. We need to get away from fossil fuels, start 100% renewables, and change the way that we look at our economic progress in the future. It's going to be a very different world, and a lot of people have to make sacrifices, but we have to have those sacrifices in order for humanity and the United States to continue to exist as a viable country.
Do you have any ideas about the mechanisms for this or recommendations for places for people to look?
Well, the Iowa caucuses and the Iowa county parties are the place to start. You get them on board. You get them all saying the same message. You reach out to independents and even Republicans. You use groups like the Climate Reality Group in Ames, Iowa, CCL in Des Moines, Sierra Club, and we all have to unite to say this is enough, and we must elect candidates that put climate first. Otherwise, we won't get anywhere. And it's going to be an uphill battle because groups like Monsanto, Mid-America, who still has 70% of Iowa is based on coal, we're going to have an uphill battle. They have billions and billions of dollars that they will have no problem spending trying to fight this.
So it's a challenge.
Big challenge, but I think the American people are up to it.
Okay. Well, thank you for the Earth Day message, John Davis.
Thank you for having me.
This is KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen and Pat Schlarbaum. Other voices you heard were Dennis Hart, Larry Stone, Ralph Rosenberg, Angie Carter, Fred Kirschenman, Aaron Lehman, and John Davis.
Our engineer is Cynthia McClure, and our thank you, Cynthia. And our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from the CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Other music you heard was from the Barn Owl Band. Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon, but at 7 p.m. there will be a live broadcast from a group of young poets called Spoken Word for our first Pantorium session. Tomorrow from 7 to 8, we'll have Cheshire Moon. Wednesday is the Barn Owl Band. And Thursday, we close our Pantorium sessions with Slice. Come to any or all live at the Pantorium building or listen at home.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you call, if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.